Hello, and welcome to the South African History Archives' Freedom of Information Program podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to have conversations with various individuals around the right to access of information in South Africa. Welcome back to our podcast. Thank you for joining us again this week. I'd like to send a shout out to everyone who listened to our first podcast. Thank you so much for the positive feedback. A special shout out to my friend Caitlin. She's up all the way in Canada, and she just shared some of their own experiences around access to information and the regulatory challenges that they're having there. And it just is a great reminder that we are part of a global village, and the struggles for justice and access to information are something that's happening all over the world, and we here at SAHA are not alone. Now, for today's episode, it's very rare that somebody gets to interview their boss, but that's what's happening with me today. We have as a guest today Dr. Geraldine Freisler. She is amazing. We call her Dr. G here, and she is our fierce leader and director here at SAHA. She is also the program manager for the archival team and the struggles to justice team. And the reason why we have Dr. G here is because she is an expert on the contemporary archive and the importance of archiving and how that feeds into the broader conversations around access to information. Because if you don't have adequate archives, you don't get to distribute your information properly and people can't access it. So welcome, Dr. G. Thank you for joining us today. I think the very basic point to start is most people may not really know the difference between an archive and a museum. And if you could just tell us, what is the difference between an archive and a museum?
In my view, it's all about semantics, really. They both perform similar things, which is they are both sites of knowledge production, research, sites for public programming. You can draw exhibitions from the collections. The antiquated approach to museums and archiving has archives as the support structure for museums. But in contemporary, in the contemporary spaces that we move within now, is that archives can be perform the same function as museums, where they can, as if we take the South African History Archive, for example, SAHA does similar things that a museum would ordinarily do, which is to exhibit from the material that is housed in the collections. Also, we do public programming and do publications. So that is part of the knowledge production that an archive can do. So it's really, in my view, it's not that different from what a museum does.
Now, SAHA has a 30-year track history in doing this work of the archive, and it began, obviously, during apartheid. What role has the archive played in securing this democratic space that we're in right now?
So 30 years ago, actually before it precedes 1988, when SAHA came into existence, the work started around collecting what was considered endangered material. So that would be posters that were designed, t-shirts that were all produced during the struggle period. And this was identified as material that should be preserved for posterity, but also because activists realized the importance of preserving this history. So the importance of archiving then was to make sure that this survives, because also there was, if you remember, in the 1980s, there was a state of emergency. So there was all the state censure around this material that was regarded as against the apartheid policy. So there was a real threat that this material, if confiscated, would be destroyed. So activists, they took it upon themselves, often with very limited funding or no funding at all, to, in their kind of, in their way, to archive this material. And often it would involve, like as in the case of SAHA, that this material was collected and then it was taken to Zimbabwe, where it was stored until the political organizations were unbanned in the 1990, and then it was repatriated back to South Africa. And that is how SAHA came into existence in 1988. And that's the same story with other similar organizations that also came into being around, which is known as the post-apartheid heritage institutions, of which SAHA would also be considered as one of them, where this archive or this archival material was actually constituted outside of the borders of South Africa. And then as the democratic dispensation came into effect, this was returned to South Africa. That's why there's a very strong resonance with Maibwe, Africa, where it returns back to Africa. What it means now is, so while in the 90s there was a clear, not a clear idea, but there was a real drive towards collection and preservation and understanding, that there was a cognizance around the understanding of the importance around this material. And it is notable in the policies that were written around arts and culture around that time, specifically in terms of the ANC policy in relation to arts and culture. The realities, unfortunately, of the legacy of colonialism and apartheid and the post-apartheid situation has been that there, although there was initially a clear drive towards maintaining and preserving and trying to understand the heritage work and the memory work that needs to be done in South Africa, the reality is that 24 years after the ushering in of democracy, South Africa is still struggling with social justice struggles, that there's still a struggle for basic human rights, such as housing. So that means the ripple effect is that the government will unfortunately concentrate, focus on those things, the basic human rights, to give people rights, access to education and housing and sanitation, and arts and culture then falls by the wayside.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is, in the post-apartheid era, in the early years, there was a certain euphoria around preserving history, but as the enormity of the socioeconomic challenges arose, the government has shifted its focus from arts and culture to your daily bread and butter issues. So would you say that that is the problem? Because what we see with archiving, in it's not just a South African issue. I don't even know if other African countries even have archives. Is it a bread and butter issue? Would you say that that is what stops archives from being adequately funded and a lot of awareness around the importance of keeping history?
I would say, I mean, it's not as monolithic as that. It's obviously a very complex issue. It's not only about governments focusing on basic human rights, but also that there's just, in some cases, probably a lack of capacity, that there's funding issues, underfunding, just not enough human resources or people that are skilled to do the work. So those are some of the issues that are plaguing, I think, archives, at least on the continent. And then as for the South African archival system, it's been underfunded. It's lack of human resources. It's not enough skilled labor. It's that not enough people are being trained to fill those gaps. And also because it's not an area that is recognized, I think, by the government as an important area to preserve or to look after, because there's the urgent need to first look at housing, education, all those other pressing needs. Whereas if you do not look after your history, then you become a people without history. And in 50 years, you won't have any records to draw on to tell you where you come from. Which is a philosophical issue, but it's an important one nonetheless.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's something that we see here at FOIP as a program under SAHA is that currently we have a case with the DOD, and part of the challenges that we've seen with previous engagements with the Department of Defense and cordial conversation with the Department of Justice is they just don't have good archival systems. Mm-hmm. And they are unable to keep those records in a manner that is sufficient and ensures that when someone does make a PIA request, then they can just pull on those records because their archives are in shambles and tatters, and the records are not being kept adequately in a way that ensures that the right to access to information is protected through adequate archival systems. But I just want to move the conversation a little because so we get that the archive is important. It's important to keep your history. Like you said, you don't want to be a people without history. And we know that archives play an important role in unlocking hidden histories, whereas if someone, the people who control media spaces or the people who are writing the books, they're able to then control the narratives. Whereas if you have a good archive that takes on a material from a variety of sources, you tend to have a more accurate historical lens of what's happening. Having said that, we are in a digital age now. You know, archives are physical spaces. Do you think that the archive still has a role in the age of the cloud?
You know, I would say that there's a very tangible role still left for physical archives to play. Why I say that? I say that because, one, I'm a historian, I'm a researcher. The aura of the document is very important in the sense that it allows you to sometimes discern things on paper that a digital object won't be able to give you, render. Even though we have technology is so advanced that you can see minute details on documents, I would say that that's also a very complex argument because there is the scramble, this virtual stampede taking place. It's been ongoing for a couple of years. There's been a multitude of projects, digital projects that has been either completed or it's underway. The challenges therein lies that often the people that are running these projects do not understand the politics around digitization. One is, I want to make an argument for what Walter Benjamin calls the aura of the document, which is when you digitize something, an object, whatever it is, it loses something from that digitization project. Now that in itself, that's a deep philosophical argument that I won't go into. The second part is that with a virtual stampede, it is also not guaranteed that this technology is stable. So I would still argue for the physicality and the materiality of the object, that this is the reason why physical archives are still needed, because for the reason that technology can be fallible, and if that is destroyed and you don't even have a physical artifact, it is well enough to have all these other things in place like cloud and storage, other storage devices. Actually, your other formats of storage has proven more stable in the long run. There are ways to preserve paper for hundreds of years. I'm not arguing against digitization. I would just implore people to think carefully about the politics and the processes involved in digitization. It's not the quick answer to preservation. Archives have been there for a long time, physical archives, and they have survived. There are documents that are 500 years old, if not older. So I would, and there is nothing, as an historian, there is nothing like feeling the physicality of the document. That is how you establish a relationship with your research. That's what I feel.
Yeah, I think there is definitely an argument to be made about keeping original materials. Mm. But now the question that then arises is, from a cost point of view, is it cheaper to just have digital archives? And I think just to build up on that question, and maybe you can answer this after you're done with the issue of cost, is what material is worth archiving? An archive can be, people sort of think an archive is all history, anything that's happening, it needs to be archived. Is there specific material that deserves to be archived? And I know as SAHA, we are an archive for past and contemporary struggles for justice. So maybe you can expand on what material that means in terms of PAYA and access to information, the archiving work that we're doing there. But what makes something worth archiving?
So what an archive is, it can never, ever archive everything. An archive will always be a selection. And that selection depends on the archivist or what the mandate is of the archive. So if the archive is, say you have an archive dedicated to collecting Marikana material, that is what you are collecting. You might broaden your mandate a little and say, we are collecting any material relating to violence on mines. Mm-hmm. But coming back to SAHA, we are an archive that collects past and contemporary struggles related to social justice issues, right? So that is very clear. We are guided by our mandate, one, and not all of the collections or people that contact SAHA collections, you have to first appraise the collection, obviously, and see if this speaks to your mandate. And also, you have to see what other pockets of archival material is already available in that field. Because what you want to do, it's a highly selective process. Mm. It's just impossible to document everything, every human activity there is under the sun. Just like history, archives are very, it's a construction, it's constituted by someone.
Mm.
So you were talking earlier about a more accurate historical reflection of what happened. But always we have to remember that archives are mediated because there's human involvement. It's mediated by someone.
And so here at SAHA, we have focused on struggles for justice, which is we have an incredible collection of some security legislative director files that we have begun to obtain using PAYA applications. We have T-shirt collections, which you'll tell us a bit more later about an exciting exhibition that's coming up. We have some of the original Rivonia trial documents that are here. We have such a wide range of material that relates to the struggles for justice in South Africa. But because we are a contemporary archive, I think you like to call it a living archive, we feed into the archive using PAYA. And that's where the relationship between access to information and archive comes in, is that for us to get the information, we need to have a good understanding and a good use of the access to information laws, where we can approach government and request that they give us these documents that are important for posterity, like you said, to be a people with the history. Now, do you think, in light of our 260 character youth, are we positioning ourselves in a way that is relatable to them, you know, as an archive? And I mean, we do contemporary items such as the Women's March. We attended there. There were some posters that were collected from there. But in light of everything we say, it's relevant, we know. But have we positioned ourselves as something that our millennials and our 2000s can relate to?
I think in the last couple of years, SAHA has tried to position itself in terms of getting exposure from social media, making itself, getting a Facebook account, that kind of thing. It's been on Twitter. So it does all these updates and try to stay relevant through that, because that is the medium that younger people connect on. But I also think it a lot sometimes have to do with funding the repositioning yourself. So in order to get through to more younger, you know, another target market, sorry to use that kind of language, would be the younger people.
And they are the future. They are the future.
So I do think funding or lack of funding does play a role, a fundamental role in that, because that does mean that you as an organization, you need to get out of the office and do workshops, or you have to do these public outreach programs with young people to make them aware that there is an organization like Saha. Otherwise, I mean, what are the chances that they will Google Saha for some research? Maybe if they have a research project, but just to know about struggle t-shirt collections, or that there's an exhibition. So I do think Saha has tried, but funding definitely does play a role in that, because if you do not have that and the manpower, then there's just not, and Saha does not have a dedicated public outreach officer in that regard that knows how to draw in these crowds to events.
Well, that's why we have awesome millennials on the team, and that's why we're doing podcasts to get information out there about the importance of the archive and how if as an archive that keeps records, as well as the importance of getting good archiving system in our governments, because if we don't have good archival systems in civil society and in government, then we are at risk. We're at risk because the limited mediums that people get information in the age of fake news and alternative facts, it is so important to have reliable resources that contain original material. You know, in Europe and in your travels, you've seen this, how important documented, archived material is to dispute people who would tell alternative stories about history and to erase history of people. And as Africans, we have experienced so much erasure of our history. And maybe this is the next question. Do you think the reason why people don't value the archive as much is because as a people we've gotten so used to having our histories erased that we've learned to live without accurate histories?
I think my answer to that question would be twofold. Is the continent is steeped in an oral history tradition where we have recorded history in other ways. That is the one. So we almost need to relook at our way of archiving in order to deal with that. And not when I say deal with that, it's not to say that we have to adapt to it. We have to rethink an African way of archiving because our way of archiving is premised on a European way of archiving, which does not factor, which is not premised on an oral tradition, right? So that is the first thing. That's what we have to do, is to refigure completely our way of archiving and make it an African solution. It's not a problem. That's not what I'm saying. It's just a new approach to archiving in Africa. So I don't think it's that Africans do not care about archiving or the importance of history. It's just because of socioeconomic situation in most places in Africa, it's not crucial. What is crucial here is to survive, unfortunately. So people focus on all the other things before they focus on their history.
That's an amazing analysis. I like that, because so much of our systems are predicated on what we've learned from our colonizers. And that is part of losing our histories, isn't it?
Right.
Actually learning how to tell our own histories and keep our own histories. Archives for Justice are something that is growing in South Africa. And you spoke earlier on about how apartheid was such a big thing that at the end of it, there was a drive and a real imperative to archive the material. Do you think that the, apart from obviously the socioeconomic considerations, is it that maybe because apartheid has ended, we are redefining our current struggles and we don't see, of course, apartheid was a crime against humanity. It was atrocious, and there is absolutely nothing in contemporary times that matches to it. But there are certain struggles that are still going on that we are seeing. An easy one to identify is, you know, in Marikana, and that is it because we're saying that these events are not as impactful or as worthy of archiving as the stuff that happened during apartheid?
Mm-hmm.
Are we saying that fees must fall, and the stuff that the fees must fall, activists that they've gone through, that we at FOIP have been using PIA along with our partner organizations to gain a better understanding of that, and different struggles that are happening, that is it because we don't think it's that big a struggle, because we came out of apartheid, and it will take some time for us to reconfigure maybe as a people and realize that we are still in a struggle.
Right. I think the answer there for me would be that there's a certain awareness around this, that people are tired of the struggle, and that they're not, that we the struggle continues. We have come officially out of apartheid, but much of the legacies, most of the legacies, is still reverberating through South Africa today. And you can see it in many kind of situations, whether it's land, it's housing, it's education, it's access to basic amenities. People are still struggling with that. And there's a certain amnesia also around it, because you have to remember, trauma memory, it works. It's very interconnected. So I would say people are tired of struggling. It's not that a struggle supersedes another one, but definitely that spirit of activism that was around from the 1950s up until the 1980s have dissipated. And also there was a large push on the international side in terms of the solidarity movements that actually galvanized and assisted the struggle for liberation in South Africa.
Now, you mentioned something interesting. You say that the push for the protests have gone down, and that, you know, but has it? I mean, if you look and say fees must fall?
No, I'm not saying the protests have gone down. I'm saying that people are weary. So it's not to say that the struggle for liberation was more important than any of the struggles that are still going on. It's just, I think people have realized that, yes, we've won the fight against apartheid, but it has officially ended. The struggle has not ended in the sense of that we are still fighting for the same basic things that we've been fighting for.
Okay, so people are wary. And so the thing that must happen then is, I guess, a passing on of the mantle. That maybe it's the issue of the generation that fought so hard during apartheid needs to pass on the mantle.
They are weary, that's what I'm saying.
There's a need for the new generation to rise up. And they have. And to rise up more and be more active.
Right.
And start archiving in our own ways, like you're saying, and figuring out how to tell our own histories.
Right.
So we've come to the end of our chat. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and sit with us. The FOIP team is nothing without the archive, because so much of what we look for is in the archive. And this is why it made perfect sense all those many years ago to have a Freedom of Information program within the archive, because access to information laws work to feed archives and keep them alive. So we thank you for your time. But there is something exciting coming up, our T-shirt exhibition. If you could please just tell us about that and where people can check out for all that stuff that the new kids use, the Facebook and the Twitter. to check out more about it?
Sure. Saha is going to be having a struggle t-shirt exhibition sometime in late October, early November. Please see our website for the exact date. It's very exciting. It's been an exhibition long in the making. It will showcase some original t-shirts that was designed right here in Johannesburg, went to Zimbabwe to be kept in secret before it came back to South Africa. That forms part of a very large t-shirt collection. How is that, Saha? Please see our website and for more details, and we hope to see you there. Be a very interesting exhibition.
It's going to be an exciting exhibition. I, for one, am excited. So you can check out our Twitter page, our Facebook, and our website to see us there. On Twitter, you can catch us. Our handle is at Saha News. That's at S-A-H-A News. And you can follow us there for any updates on activities that are happening around Saha. Thank you once again for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed this. Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed that. For more information, please visit our website on www.saha.org.za. Alternatively, you can go to www.foip.org.za.